It's 78 degrees in Nashville. Fair skies overhead. Broadcaster Says You is up next. You're on Nashville Public Radio.
Welcome to this week's edition of Says You, Public Radio's game with words where the really hard questions are answered by the audience. Ma'am, I'm going to let you tell them why.
Don't have a clue.
Okay, not a clue.
And that's good enough for Says You.
Right.
Yeah.
Spoken like a true panelist.
How many of you are sitting there Googling as we speak?
Yeah, right.
Each week we aim to put new words into your vocabulary, terms to define things heretofore undefined.
Fear of getting the flu from taking communion.
I'm not going to take any points away if that's it. So come to the shores of Seneca, a lake in New York North, where words you've never heard before will bandy back and forth. We'll divisect our native tongue right before your eyes. First a break, then we're back to Linguistically Surprised.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Giles Snyder. It's been raining for quite a while in New York. But now Irene has finally arrived. The National Hurricane Center in Miami says the storm began moving over Coney Island about an hour ago. It's no longer a hurricane, though. It's a tropical storm. Forecasters say Irene's top winds have dropped to 65 miles per hour. The normally bustling New York City virtually shut down before the storm. NPR's Joel Rose is in Battery Park. He says it's awfully quiet there.
For the most part, it looks very deserted. It looks like people moved to higher ground. And none of the businesses here in Battery Park City are open. For that matter, not many in Manhattan were open on my way down here. I mean, it seemed like a lot of the delis, a lot of the coffee shops, a lot of the drugstores, like a lot of businesses had not opened yet. And there were a few isolated places that had the lights on, but for the most part, I think, you know, people have been very cautious.
Officials are now worried about flooding. They fear Irene will push too much seawater into the city. Earlier this morning, Irene made landfall over coastal New Jersey, where Governor Chris Christie says evacuees are being told not to return just yet because of extensive flooding in some areas. But he says damage does not appear to be as bad as expected.
And what we're finding, at least preliminarily, is that the property damage right along the coastline is not as bad as we had feared it would be. Now, that's preliminary, and it's from helicopter passes.
Christie speaking on NBC's Today Show. Hurricane Irene tore past the Maryland coast overnight. NPR's Nathan Rott is in Ocean City.
It's eerily quiet in Ocean City. After a night of sustained 60-mile-per-hour winds and gusts up to 80 that rattled street signs and pushed driving sheets of rain, the weather has calmed as city officials try to assess the damage. The eye of the storm passed within 50 miles of the seaside town early this morning, dumping about a foot of rain and flooding parts of downtown. Power is still out in large parts of the city and debris litters the streets, but no other major damage has been reported, and the city's emergency response center said they weren't aware of any injuries. Most of the city's 7,000 residents were evacuated in the days before the storm, and officials say the city will remain closed until a full damage assessment is carried out. Nathan Rott, NPR News, Ocean City, Maryland.
The New York-based Human Rights Watch says there is evidence strongly suggesting the Gaddafi government killed civilians and detainees before leaving Tripoli. NPR's Jason Bobian visited a site just behind one of Gaddafi's army bases where there appears to have been a massacre.
People there said that Gaddafi forces came in on Wednesday, killed almost everyone who was inside, threw grenades in. These were men who had been detained several months ago as being supporters of the rebel opposition. We saw charred bodies all over the floor. They said there were 160 people being held on this compound. I counted about 50 skulls in the charred remains.
NPR's Jason Bobian reporting. This is NPR News. U.S. officials say the Libyan national, who was reputed to be al-Qaeda's second-in-command, has been killed in Pakistan. From Karachi, NPR's Julie McCarthy reports that while there is American confirmation, the Pakistanis are being more circumspect.
U.S. officials, who spoke on condition of anonymity, say that al-Qaeda number 2, Atiyah al-Rahman, was killed on August 22nd in a drone strike in Pakistan's tribal areas. One official said his death represents a major blow to al-Qaeda and described Atiyah as running the daily operations for the group as the second in command since Osama bin Laden's death in May. But in Pakistan, local authorities in Waziristan and the military say they have no verification of Atiyah's death. The difficult-to-access tribal areas are dominated by the militants, and the army spokesman noted that verifying the authenticity of information as to who may have been killed there is extremely problematic. Julie McCarthy, NPR News, Karachi.
Top United Nations officials say they had no prior warning or intelligence beyond general threats of Friday's attack on the UN headquarters in Nigeria's capital. The UN's Deputy Secretary General visited the site of the blast today and called the bombing an attack on global peace. A spokesman says the death toll has climbed to 23. Weather permitting, the teams from Huntington Beach, California and Hamamatsu City, Japan will square off today for the Little League World Series crown. The California team took the U.S. championship yesterday, beating a team from Billings, Montana. Japan took the international crown in South Williamsport, Pennsylvania, with a victory over Mexicali, Mexico. I'm Giles Snyder, and this is NPR News from Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the Wallace Foundation, a source of ideas for expanding learning opportunities beyond the school day, at wallacefoundation.org.
Welcome to Says You, a game of bluff and bluster, words and whimsy.
Support for Says You in Geneva, New York comes from Hobart and William Smith Colleges and the good folks at WEOS-FM in Geneva.
Now, join our panelists and your host, Richard Scherr.
Thank you. Thank you. From the stage of the Smith Opera House in Geneva, New York, welcome to Says You, a simple game with words played by two teams, the first of which sits stereo right. He's a good old worker and a good old pal, Mr. Tony Khan. She's hauled some barges in her day, filled with lumber, coal, and hay, Francine Akbar. And you getting it now? And he can always tell his neighbor, always tell his pal, since he navigated yesterday the Erie Canal, Mr. Doug Palau. A local color there, the Erie Canal. Who's the captain this week?
I'm the captain.
Tony?
Yes.
Will be the captain. To my left, team two, I haven't seen her in a dog's age, says Hugh's holy terrier, Carolyn Faye Fox. She hasn't changed a bit since the day we first met. There has got to be some painting in her attic, Miss Paula Lyons. And it's always a pleasure to get together, rain, wind, snow, hail, mud, and the airlines notwithstanding, with Mr. Arnie Reisman. who leads this time?
I will be the captain.
Arf.
Correct answers are worth 10 points or whatever fraction thereof deemed appropriate. We always advise new listeners, grab a pen and paper. Let's begin with a return bout of units of measure.
Oh.
How much, how many, how long, or how few are the following units of measure? Carolyn,
yes.
A growler.
Well, it's a way to drink beer.
It certainly is. You want to take a shot at this one?
And how...
What's the unit?
Oh, gosh. I don't know exactly how big a growler is.
One stomach.
Yes, he's just about right. That's exactly right. Yeah. One stomach is...
Thank
one,
you, Arnie.
Yeah, one stomach full is a growler.
Is almost right. Anybody want to take a... It's actually a container of beer designed for carryout. Mm-hmm. Anybody want to take a shot at this one?
Is that like a keg? I mean, a small keg?
Well,
it's like a St. Bernard style keg.
Like a keg?
Yes, it is a St. Bernard style. It's, yeah, it is. It's about a half gallon.
Yeah.
Like a keg.
About a half gallon. So that's what? About so big, maybe?
Yeah, it's something that goes.
For the radio audience,
yes, but you
so
can't
big.
Miss it. Yeah. Picture a St. Bernard. All right.
Yes, picture a St. Bernard and you got a growler. Very all good. Right. So try this one, Tony.
That's 10 points.
Unit of measure, a shovel.
A shovel?
Yes.
Well, a way of measuring half of the things you tell us.
Oh, yes.
Half.
Shovel. Jeez, you know, I mean, it can't possibly be an obvious answer, right? Like how much dirt you can pick up at one go.
Well, yeah, it is pretty much. But,
okay, so how much is in a shovel?
Exactly.
Well, gosh.
I would go with something like a cubic foot.
A cubic foot? That's a lot.
You actually think that it's a cubic foot? You know something? You're exactly right.
Hey, Francine.
I mean...
I
have to qualify that. A cubic foot would be a foot by a foot.
It would be different for a church,
yeah,
of course.
Yeah, by a foot, yes, of course.
A square foot.
It's not quite a, it's more a square foot than a cubic foot. It's not that high up off the shovel. Let me just say this. In U.S. building trades, a common rule of thumb is that a cubic yard, and I couldn't believe this, contains 150 standard shovels of material.
Yeah.
You mean to tell me that a cubic yard, 3 by 3 by 3, is 150 shovels?
Yes. Do you know that a cubic yard of water weighs a ton?
I did not know this. Well, then we've learned a lot today, yes. This means a shovel contains about 5 liters, actually, of volume, and a cubic meter is about 200 shovels.
Why is their answer of a cubic foot, then, correct?
Don't start.
Arnie, when did you start getting logical?
I'm trying to break them down over time. Let's see how this works. All right, I was very generous and incorrectly generous. But
Arnie,
this is the hardest one, but I need you to think about this a little. Think about where you may have heard this. How much, how many, how few, or how long are the following units of measure? A stimp.
S-T-I-M-P?
S-T-I-M-P. Well, where might you have heard that?
That's like a wren. What?
No, it's not.
Rennie and Stimpy?
Yes.
Yeah, Ren and Stimpy. Stimp.
Stimp. You usually hear it the second weekend in April, and then right around Father's Day again in June.
Lots of yelling over taxes.
Yeah, and then again the third week in July, and then again the second week in August. You usually hear about stimps.
Are these all have to do with taxes?
No, nothing. Nothing whatsoever.
I hear it 4 times a year.
Well, you usually do, especially stimps. That second week in April, boy. You really, they bring it up a lot then.
Who's
all right,
they?
The second week in April, the beginning of baseball.
It's not baseball. It is a sport. It is not baseball.
Okay. Are we doing golf?
We are.
Well, let's see. What else could...
The length of a shot, wouldn't they? I mean...
No, it has nothing to do with the length of a shot.
Is it a unit of time?
Well, in an odd way, but no, it's not a unit of time.
You're not measuring distance.
Again, in a way, but no, not.
No, it's the. Are we talking club lengths or anything like that?
No, you know, I'm going to give you.
I got golf, and that's
about
as hard.
Yeah, you got golf and all that. I'm going to give you 8 points because this is a really hard one, and I'm being generous to you guys. Anyone else know what it might be?
The measure of the angle of the land that you have to putt across?
No. Should I ask the audience? Anyone know? That is exactly right from the audience. It is a measure of speed.
Wow.
In fact, the speed of a golf green. What they do is they take what is called a stimp meter, all right, which is invented, of course, by Edward Stimson. A golf ball rolls down a ramp, a 20-degree angle ramp, and then rolls on a level section of the green. The speed, the distance at which it goes, the number of feet that it goes, is the rate, the stimp rating. A rating of less than 10 is a slow green, and a rating of 12 is a championship green. All right. Well, that was pretty good, Arnie. You got to golf, and you got 8 points. Try this one, Francine, and I'll be harder on you this time. A stone's throw.
A stone's throw.
Yes.
A stone's throw. About the distance you could throw a stone.
Yes.
she said with her usual insight.
Yes. It's actually an informal expression for a short distance, but yes, it is the distance that you can throw a stone. Now, you're going to have to come pretty close to beat his 8 points.
50 yards.
Right. 50 you know something? Yards. He's pretty close, actually.
Well, that's good enough for today.
Can yeah, that's he's 8 points there. It isn't 50 yards. It's 50 meters.
Did I say yards?
Yeah.
I meant meters.
Stone doesn't weigh much. You can really throw it.
I say yards.
I never converted with the rest of the country.
I don't need that. It's 164 feet. That's pretty good. Would be a comfortable stone's throw from... You think you could throw the ball, throw 164 feet?
Depends on
the size of the stone.
That's true. The Rock of Gibraltar doesn't go that far, but...
Or Mick Jagger.
I got nothing for that, Arnie. I got nothing. Absolutely nothing. 164 feet, they say, would be a comfortable stone's throw for most people, although athletes could probably do about twice that distance. Paula, what can you tell me about a baker's dozen?
Oh.
It's not enough to tell me what it is. You got to tell me why it is.
Well, a baker's dozen is 13.
That's right.
And I know that because I grew up in a family of 12 people. I did.
That's right.
And we loved those baker's dozens, and there were lots of fights over that 13th piece.
Yeah.
But now, so why did it happen? Just in case there was an imperfection and when they were baking?
I thought it was just generosity.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't think anything is based on just generosity anymore.
He's such a cynic.
It's, you know, public relations. It's a way to get you back in the bake shop.
It's a little bit more than that. This goes
well,
back
Carolyn
away.
Well, Carolyn is our food expert. May I consult Carolyn?
You may, absolutely.
It was in the days when
you
they
may,
had 13
but it
fingers.
Won't help. Oh, it won't help?
I don't think it will help.
So can you give us a hint about when it surfaced as
yeah,
a term?
Yeah, this goes back to the 1200s.
The 1200s.
Yeah.
So it was all the 13th right. century.
Could the bakers not go to school and couldn't count?
Couldn't count.
Two.
No.
Six. Give them a dozen,
no,
Harry.
That wasn't their motivation.
Oh.
One for each century plus one for good luck.
One for good luck.
That you're going to applaud for? I was taken aback by that.
He was trying to give us a clue?
What would be their motivation?
What would be their motivation, and it's not public relations, it's something cynical, just like you. Is that what you're
exactly,
telling me?
Exactly, yes.
Okay.
Just in case one of them was poisoned.
No.
Polluted.
No, not that.
Diluted.
I had rat hair.
You're going to get 8 points.
Right.
Rat hair.
Four rat hairs.
You're going to get 8 points for that, and I'm going to go the other side. Any thoughts?
I wonder if it was to make up for the amount of bread that you couldn't eat because the crust stank.
What?
You know, there are two kinds of people,
even back
in the 13th century. Those who eat crusts and those who
yeah,
don't.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a good guess. It's completely wrong.
When the baker, at the end of the day, there'd be...
extras.
Left buns left over, and the baker would take them home, but because it was his shop, he took a 13th.
No, that's not it. Anyone from the audience want to guess the motivation? That's it. It was more than a fine, sir. You could be garroted for this. A baker's dozen is, of course, 13. The custom is very old, dating back there, when weights and prices of loaves of bread were strictly regulated by royal proclamations called assizes. And bakers could be jailed or even executed
if
they failed to provide fair weight at listed prices. In order to completely avoid that situation, they always added a 13th.
So it was based on the weight of what a dozen was supposed to be?
Yeah, I think so. And I think it basically they just didn't want to take any chances.
Well, yeah.
Punishments were a little strict in those days. 8 points for that.
Who wants to get married
over a
cup?
Banks don't give interest anymore.
Yeah, right. String them up.
I think it's something we ought to consider bringing back, frankly. I don't know.
The garrote?
Yeah.
Oh.
And this one I loved. And you need to think about this one. You can figure this one out. Doug, how much is a jillion?
A jillion?
G-I-L-L-I-O-N, a jillion.
Let's see, a million, billion, zillion. It's more than a zillion?
No. I don't know. I don't know what a zillion is.
Well, you have to know that in order to know a gillion.
Doug, I think this really differs depending upon the country.
It does.
Well, what country?
The British consider a quadrillion, something that's one followed by 25 zeros. We think of a quadrillion as one followed by 15 zeros, which explains the economic problem that Europe seems to be experiencing right now. So I'm guessing that there are probably several answers to what a jillion is.
Well, actually, no. It's a real number. G-I-L-L-I-O-N.
Okay, because...
the significance of the G.
Is it French?
It is, in fact.
Take it away, Francie. Yeah.
I thought you computer buffs might get this a little
gigabyte,
easier.
Giga. Oh, giga means a billion. So, jillion would be a billion billion or a billion thousand?
It's a billion. And you know what? I can't give you 10 points. I'm going to give you 8 points for that. Because I did lead you there, you know, kicking and screaming. But it is an informal alternate name for the number 10 to the ninth, called billion in America, but often called milliard in French and thousand million in Britain. The reasoning here is that if mega means a million, tera is a trillion, then giga should be a jillion.
Is there a baker's jillion?
There you go. Imagine the things you learn here.
A jillion. Let's go on to round 2, which is played with a little musical help from our friends, the East Hill Classic Jazz Quartet. Thanks, guys. It's the first of the Says You Bluffing rounds. Carolyn, each of you will receive a card defining a word. Only one has the actual definition. The other two have blank cards. Those poor souls have a few seconds to make up a definition on the spot, good enough to fool Tony's team. 10 points are up for grabs to Tony if he can find the bluffer, or to you, Carolyn, if he can't. Let's take a few seconds to come up with a definition for the word acnestus. A-C-N-E-S-T-I-S. Acnestus. Gentlemen? Boston, Massachusetts, Hartford, Connecticut, Seattle, Washington. All stops on Says You's Fall Caravan of Cajolery. On Saturday, September 24th, we open the season at St. Joseph College in West Hartford. Then on Saturday, October 15th, it's matinee and now evening performances at Bemis Hall in Lincoln, Massachusetts. Then in November, it's off to Seattle for 2 shows at Town Hall and a community Says You in Port Townsend.
Well, that's wonderful.
Tickets, information, and details are available at saysyou.net. That's SAYSYOU. Where if you follow that Join the Fun link, we'll show you how to join the fun. So remember, it's Hartford in September, Boston in October, and Seattle in November. Live performances of Says You.
You can't blame me for being amorous. Amorous, wonderful. Marvelous that you should care for me.
Says You returns after this from home.
I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. Assessing the aftermath of Hurricane Irene. Also, MSNBC culture commentator Torrey creates an imaginary tournament of tennis writers. David Foster Wallace is seated first. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture, here and now.
Weekdays at noon.
Hi, it's us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers.
You know, I'm having all kinds of problems trying to trade in my old car.
Oh, dealer's still insisting that it run, huh?
Exactly. If it ran, I wouldn't have to trade it in.
Well, if your old car won't leave the driveway or won't leave it reliably, donate it to this station through the Car Talk Vehicle Donation Program.
You'll help pay for the programs you love, and you'll pocket a tax deduction.
Pretty good, huh? Here's how to do it.
For information on supporting Nashville Public Radio with your vehicle donation, visit our website, WPLN.org.
Support for Says You on WPLN comes from WPLN listener members and from TPAC announcing their 2011-2012 HCA TriStar Broadway at TPAC season. Season tickets for all 6 Broadway shows are available now online at tpac.org. And by the Web School, congratulating the Web School Theater Program for its recent participation at the Fringe Festival in Scotland. Details online at thewebschool.com. Time is 9:24. 77 degrees in Nashville.
You can hear Says You Again for free on any of the stations that stream our show. Just follow the High Definitions radio stations link on our website, find a convenient time, and listen again and again. For copies of this show or any other in our history, you can find downloads at saysyou.net. Just follow that show downloads link and find high-quality copies available. That was the East Hill Classic Jazz Quartet. That is Mr. Brian Earle on clarinet, Drew Freck on the banjo, Steve Brown on bass, and Johnny Russo on the trumpet and trombone. Thank you very much, guys. Nice, nice. I want you also to take a moment to recognize the great efforts that will be offered tonight by that fearless twosome that sits in the middle. That is Chris and Liberty Clark, our scorekeepers for the evening. Thanks, you guys. Thank you. You have given us a few moments with the word acnestus. We will go first to Carolyn Faye Fox.
Acnestus. It's something animals have. Horses have it. Cows have it. Some dogs have it, especially if they're fat. And it's something my cat does not have, because acnestus is the part of an animal's skin that it cannot reach to scratch.
My dog has one of those. Yeah.
The unscratchable area of an animal.
Yes.
I've seen Ollie do that. He reaches back there, no chance. You know, he's trying to bite his shoulder. He can't do it. That's the acnestus. Could be that. Or Arnie, something else.
Well, it is animal-based, but it's a disease.
Ah.
It's a bacteria-borne illness that prevents and stops milk production in cows. It stops the cow from giving milk.
The cow won't give milk?
Not if she has acnestus.
She has acnestus.
Hey, Clem, Bossy's got acnestus.
It's true.
Well, tell her to spit it out.
It could be that. Or Paula, something else.
Well, actually, acnestus is a biological term. I mean, it's that place just under the nose where the two nostrils meet. You know, like in Chinatown, that wasn't quite the spot where he was caught, was it? No, but it's this little part under here where the nostrils meet.
The place where the nostrils meet is the acnestus.
To party.
That's the, yeah.
Where all the nostrils meet.
Sounds.
So it could either be the part of an animal where they can't reach to scratch, a disease that prevents a cow from giving milk, or that little place where the nostrils meet. It is one of those three, and Tony, the choice is yours.
Oh, it's none of them. I'm sick and tired of hearing these lies. I happen to know, it's Latin for you are acne, which I believe is a description of the ages between about 15 and 18. So I think it's a condition. So I think it's a condition.
Yeah, I did too. I thought it was a disease or a process.
I actually thought it was the condition that the animal was trying to scratch. Cleverly
designed. Well, unless Richard consults something called the Dictionary of Scratching and Itching, Volume 10, I don't think.
No.
Abridged.
Yes.
I don't think it's itching and scratching.
Is
it? Well, I think it's a condition. The ending stis sounds more like a condition than a part of the
I think it's the
nose.
Root cause of mastitis.
Mastitis.
Which is
well, that's itis. Itis is
no,
different.
No, no, no. That's what cows stis. Get when they can't... milk.
But I think we are going to go for really very little reason whatsoever with number two, right?
Right.
It's something that stops milk production.
They are pretty much unanimous over there.
Yep.
Well, how can you be pretty much unanimous?
Yeah. More or less.
Or somewhat unique.
Yeah, they're somewhat unique over there in their unanimity. That Arnie?
Acnestis is a condition in a cow which prevents the cow from giving milk. Is that in fact what it is?
Acnestis, please us make us something uppers.
10 points for that sign. That was a bluff.
Wow.
All right, audience, what do you think? I think that comes down to the place that you can't scratch. Carolyn, that's what the audience thinks. Is that what acnestis is?
Acnestis, that part of an animal's skin that it cannot reach to scratch.
Good job, audience. Good job. And 10 points for your side, Carolyn.
And how did you know that? Are you Googling the response? Or are you a vet? There you go.
Ah, okay. Acnestis. That is the definition, right? Uh-oh. That was too long a pause for me. Let's go on to round three. Peter Duhame, and I hope I pronounced that right, Peter. Peter Duhame of Manchester, New Hampshire, listens on the Internet, as more and more people do these days. Peter reminds us, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. And possibly clowns. Please, I'm glad Murray Horwitz isn't here to hear that. Please identify the following phobias.
Oh, phobias.
Carolyn?
Mm-hmm.
Philophobia. P-H-I-L-O. Philophobia.
P-H-I-L-O.
Fear of stamps? Fear of knowledge.
Fear of love?
Fear of love, yes. Or falling in love is exactly
yes.
Right.
Good.
10 points. Try this one, Tony. This is right up your alley in terms of derivations. Doxophobia. D-O-X-O-phobia.
Doxophobia.
Fear of falling off a long pier.
yeah.
Or a small dog.
Yeah, right.
Doxophobia. Doxology.
Yes.
Religion.
Okay.
Fear of religion?
No. Tony's on the right road here with doxology. That is the
road.
That's the way to go. Oh, his head is in his hands, ladies
fear
and gentlemen.
Fear of healing.
Fear of healing. I may give him some points for suffering.
Yes, fear of not having enough medical insurance.
Yeah.
Isn't doxology something religious?
Doxology, stating your faith. Fear of saying what you believe in.
No, that's not it really.
It's not the reciting
of the doctrine.
I'm going to
give you some points because you're traveling down the right road here. I'm going to give you 4 points so far.
Fear of making oaths. Or taking oaths.
You know, you're getting closer. You're getting a lot closer.
Statement of faith is, right? No, still not.
That's not it. I'm going to give you 5 points total. Give them 5 points total for that. One more point. Just, does anyone on the other side have any thoughts on this?
Fear of getting the flu from taking communion.
I'm not going to take any points away if that's it. That's of any value. Anyone on the other side?
Well, I thought
any?
It was fear of believing something that can't that you haven't been proved that hasn't been proven to
no,
you.
No, that's not it. Anyone from the audience?
Praise.
Praise is exactly right. A doxophobia is the fear of receiving praise.
Wow. Nobody on this panel has that.
That's yeah, that's no one up there.
So it is medically related. My son, the doxer.
Yes, that's
yes,
right.
Yeah.
In the clearing stands a doxo. Yes. Okay.
Wow.
Fear of receiving praise is doxophobia, and that's where the root is. Try this one, Arnie. Pteranophobia. P-T-E-R-O-N-O phobia. Pteranophobia.
Fear of pterodactyls. We got the same root, don't we? Is
in
it anything
way, yes.
That has to do with flight?
In a way, yeah.
Okay. Fear of birds. Fear of big birds. Fear of airplanes. Fear of rockets.
Fear
of angels.
Flying insects. How about that?
Well, no, you're 5 points there. You get your 5 points so far. I really like this round.
Flying.
Pteranophobia. I'm sorry.
P-T.
P-T-E-R-O-N-O. Pteranophobia.
Clouds? No.
Now, the other side thinks they know. You want to take a shot at it?
Fear of winged things?
Well, now you're really almost there.
Fear, we said
fear of feathers.
Fear of feathers.
Feathers.
Specifically, it is actually fear of being tickled by a feather.
Oh, on top of it.
But fear of feathers would have
sufficed. That's the no part. That's the Tirono part.
Yeah, right.
Just say Tirono.
Let's not be tickled by a feather. Yes, it's fear of feathers or being
fear
tickled.
Of feathers.
Try this one, Francine. Barophobia. B-A-R-O phobia. Barophobia.
How about fear of depth?
Fear of barometric pressure.
Yes. Yeah.
Not barometric pressure, no, but,
fear,
you know.
Fear of depth.
I knew we were going to get there. It is not fear of depths.
Fear of pressure?
Fear of the bends.
Boy, fear of pressure is getting really close.
Fear of wetness.
No.
Heavy wetness.
No, nothing. Well,
fear of weight. Fear of...
Close. I'm going to go to the other side. Any thoughts?
Is it smothering? Fear of smothering?
No, not that. Audience?
Drowning in your own liquid, your lungs.
No. Ooh. What a monstrous... It is actually fear of gravity.
Gravity.
Now, I'm thinking
fear
to myself...
How do you get around that?
Yeah. Who suffers from this?
That's a huge fear of mine.
Who suffers from that?
Why is your friend just going to go straight up like that? You know?
Are there any barophobes out there? I'm just curious. I'm sorry?
Up there
on the balcony.
Good point.
Yes.
And he started out over here.
Yeah. The unfortunate barophobe in the balcony has checked in there. Thank you very much, sir, and I hope the rest of the evening goes better.
It's a good title for a soap opera.
All right, now this one you can really get, but you're going to have to think about it. You're going to have to go back.
I'm going to try to think.
Back to and this is a multi-stage process here, but Paula, what do you fear if you have ostraconophobia? O-S-T-R-A-C-O-N-O phobia. Ostracano.
Ostracano.
Now,
so not fear of being ostracized.
No, but you're absolutely in the right route.
Okay.
Ostracized.
Fear of being insulted.
Fear of caviar.
Conophobia.
Fear of caviar. She's closer than you know.
And that's because?
Like Ocetra caviar.
Oh, okay.
That ostracism route, I think you really want to look at and try and figure this out.
So.
And I'll give you a lot of help with this, but you can figure this out.
It's not fear of social shunning of some sort?
No. Think more about the process of... Do you know how people used to be ostracized?
Oh, fear of a baker's dozen.
Well,
a fear of being put in stocks?
No.
Being sent away.
But how did
fear
that
of public
actually,
humiliation?
How was that determined?
When you put someone in water and see if
thing?
They drown or the witch thing?
No, that's not it. This was the classic Greek. This is a Greek root. Does the other side have any thoughts?
Do
I have a few
silence?
Thoughts. No, being put out on a mountain to die.
No,
like
nothing
that.
Of that no. nature.
Not being turned from
fear
or being
isolated.
Not being spoken to.
No. Do you all know how someone was? What was the process of being ostracized?
In ancient Greece?
Yes. Anyone from the audience have any thoughts?
Fear of shellfish.
Fear of shellfish. Give that young lady a cigar. That is exactly right. Fear of shellfish. Ma'am, I'm going to let you tell them why.
I don't have a clue.
Okay, not a clue.
And that's good enough for says you.
Right.
They are.
Spoken like a true panelist.
They are out there Googling their brains out there. But fear of shellfish. Take the cigar away from that young lady out there.
Somebody
you
put a shell on your door, or you drew a shell that had a black ball in it.
Were you put on the rocks near the water?
When you voted to ostracize someone, they used shells. The markers that they used were shells, and that's where ostracism comes from.
And
what do you
that's
mean the markers? What does that mean, the markers? Are
they,
counting.
Like the
if you vote?
Yeah, the ballots.
But if you put in a shellfish, that's
hanging
like
shells,
out.
You know.
The shells, the seashells.
Shells from the 2000s.
And they used shells of different colors, and the light shells said he can stay, and the dark shells said he had to go, and that was that.
So mussels were a bad deal.
Mussels were probably a real bad deal for people. But that's where it comes from, and that's the root. And that was a real hard one. I can't give any points, but I hope we all learned something. And I'm going to give this one to Doug. Doug, what do you fear if you have hippopotamonstrosesquipedaliophobia?
Can we spell that?
Sure. H-I-P-P-O-P-O-T-O. M-O-N-S-T-R-O. S-E-S-Q-U-I. P-E-D-A-L-I-A phobia.
Did you leave any letters of the alphabet out?
No, I got them all.
I think
that is hippopotamonstrosesquipedalia.
Well, it has to have something, it has to have a common root with hippopotamus.
And with sesquipedalian, which means many feet, right?
Yes.
Many
feet. It's a hippopotamus covered with caterpillars.
I wouldn't fear that, no.
So it's not a... Is it sesquipedalian? That means also very long, but also many, many footed.
Like a caterpillar.
Okay, so it's fear of somebody who goes on far too long and who is too fat or too... No, hippopotamus, what does that mean? Hippo means more enhanced, like...
You know what? Before you go too much further, 10 points. It is fear of long words or long speeches.
Yeah. Okay.
That's exactly what it is. From that sesquipedalian reference, hippopotamonstrosesquipedalio, and I think I deserve a round of applause for that, don't you? The hippopotamonstrosesquipedaliophobia is fear of long words or long, winded speakers.
So you can't describe your own phobia, then.
That's right. That's
yeah,
right.
Sure.
It would stick in your throat.
I tell you what I have, but I got a fear of it.
Yeah.
It's like when Thoreau said, simplify, simplify.
Yeah.
Said, well, okay, how about just simplify?
Very good, you guys. Thanks for playing that round, and thanks to Peter Duhame of Manchester, New Hampshire, for giving that category to us. Let's go on to round four, which is Tony's team's chance to have a little fun at Webster's expense. One of you will correctly define the following word. Two will bluff 10 points, Carolyn, if your team can find the rose among thorns. Take a few seconds to come up with a definition for the word Mercus. M-U-R-C-O-U-S. Mercus. Gentlemen?
Fairy tales can come true, they can happen to you when you're young at heart. For it's hard you will find to be narrow of mind when you're young at heart. You can go to extremes with impossible schemes. You can laugh when your dreams fall apart at the seams. Life gets more exciting with each passing day. Love is either in your heart or on the way. Don't you know that it's worth every treasure on earth to be young at heart? For as rich as you are, you're much better by far when you're young at heart. And if you should survive to 105, think of all you derive out of being alive. And this is the best part, you got a head start when you are among the very young at heart.
Just a quick reminder, on Saturday, September 24th, we open the season at St. Joseph College in West Hartford. Then on Saturday, October 15th, it's matinee and now evening performances at Bemis Hall in Lincoln, Massachusetts. Then in November, it's off to Seattle for two shows at Town Hall and a Community Says You in Port Townsend.
Tickets, information, and details are available at sayou.net. That's S-A-Y-S-Y-O-U, where if you follow that Join the Fun link, we'll show you how to join the fun. So remember, it's Hartford in September, Boston in October, and Seattle in November. Live performances of Says You. We'll be right back.
I'm Krista Tippett. Next time on Being, Vincent Harding, a magnificent civil rights veteran. He's spent recent decades in creative contact with new generations about the social lessons of the civil rights era. He helps us imagine how they might speak to American divisions now. This is part of the Civil Conversations Project, healing our fractured civic spaces from APM.
Sunday afternoons at 3 o'clock.
Gian Gomeschi is back this week, and he's joined by Tom Morello. The guitarist from bands like Rage Against the Machine is here with his solo project, The Night Watchman. He'll perform from the forthcoming album, Worldwide Rebel Songs, coming up on Q from PRI Public Radio International.
Weeknights at 10 o'clock.
Support for Says You on WPLN comes from WPLN listener members and from YMCA of Middle Tennessee, helping companies and employees get healthy through YMCA corporate partnerships. Information at ymcamidtn.org/corporate. And by Jana Lyle Parham at UBS Financial Services Incorporated, helping families manage their financial affairs. Lyle Parham Wealth Management, details at 750-8171.
When is Says You coming to our town? Where can I find old shows? Who played that music I heard last week? So many questions, all answered on our website at sayou.net. There you can find tickets to tapings or access our complete archive. You can contribute a question to the show and absorb ridicule on a national scale. This and more at sayou.net. S-A-Y-S-Y-O-U.
To be young at heart. And if you should survive to 105, think of all you derive out of being alive. And here is the best part. You got a head start when you are among the very young at heart.
That is the East Hill Classic Jazz Quartet. The dulcet tones of Mr. Johnny Russo. Johnny, thank you very much for giving us a little time with the word Mercus. We will go first to a puzzled-looking Tony Kahn.
Well, I guess puzzled is a good enough word for it. I'm confused. I'm confused. That's often the case, though. So, Mercus is actually short for Mercuscus. It's a seafood and pasta salad. No, okay, let's move on to the next definition, which is also offered here. It's Mercus is what a kangaroo, Hans Brinker, and a bad banjo player would all have in common.
Ah. We have a banjo player here.
So you're exempt from this, I assure you. No thumb.
No thumb.
Thumbless. Lacking a thumb.
Hans Brinker had a thumb. He just stuck
well, not
it.
not after he got, you know.
Thumbless is Mercus, okay? That's a possibility. What say you, Franzane?
Well, it's about what you think it is. It's freshwater vegetation that is green and slimy. It's, in fact, pond scum.
Pond scum. Mercus. Ugh. I say, you know, usually where my golf ball lands, right in the middle of the Mercus. Right. Well, it could be that too. Or, Doug, yet a third alternative.
Well, it's an old word, but it meant to be in a foul mood due to marital strife. Just the other day, I was murkus with my wife, and I had to sleep in the other bedroom.
To be in a foul mood.
Basically, but in the context of a marriage.
A marriage, marital strife. Just to be in a foul mood because of marital problems is to be murkus. It could be that, or pond scum, or thumbless. No wonder you were looking puzzled earlier. Yes, that's true. And, Carolyn, it is for you to sort this out.
Oh, great. No thumb, pond scum, struck dumb.
Permashane.
Yeah.
Let's see. I like the idea of thumbless.
I do, too, for some reason. For no logical reason at all.
No.
But
no, logic
has
nothing
like
to
one.
Do with it.
This is myrrh? When you said pond scum, Francine, did you mean as in the noun, or did you mean slimy as in pond scum, slimy?
Guess you'll have to figure that out.
Guess you don't have.
To me, that looks like a play on the mucus rep.
Yeah, so yes. Okay, fine. Okay, I'll go with thumbless.
Foul mood?
Foul mood, foul mood.
Mucus. Well, obviously, there's no reason for it, but thumbless, huh?
Yeah.
I like thumbless.
Well,
it's just,
we like it.
Yeah. It's our favorite.
Yes.
That's your favorite?
May not be right, but it's our favorite.
We like it. We like it.
Yeah. And that's your choice?
That's
we're
our
gonna
choice.
We're going to go, yes.
A
yes.
Unanimous choice, once again.
Yes.
Thumbless. Tony, they think that mucus means thumbless. Is that, in fact, what it means?
This is largely increasing my acnestis. I just want you to know. Mucus, lacking a thumb.
Wow.
It does indeed mean thumbless. 10 points for Carolyn's team.
Wow, why is that thumbless?
Nice job, you guys. You've been getting better and better at this as time goes on.
I don't know why it's thumbless. But
let me just ask a quick question. Are Bob and Sarah Chavaka out there? Bob and Sarah Chavaka of New Woodstock, New York, are in our audience tonight, and they have contributed a question. Thank you very much, folks, for doing that. They say, we are looking forward to seeing you in Syracuse and Geneva. Here is a contribution we call All That Jazz. From the following ridiculous puns, clues, and references, please give me the name of the jazz musician brought to mind. An example, an ex-con friar would be a felonious monk.
Monk.
Yes.
Yeah.
A begrudging round of applause for Bob and Sarah Chavaka of New Woodstock, New York. Try this one, Carolyn. Jazz musician.
Well, wait a minute. Thelonious Monk is the only one I would know.
Yeah. Well, then get help, is all I can say. Try this one, Carolyn. Jazz musician brought to mind by the clue Spicy Guy.
Spicy Guy.
Spicy.
Come on, team.
Guy.
Spicy Guy.
Herbie Mann.
I'm sorry?
Herbie Mann.
Is exactly Woo! Right. Herbie Mann. He's exactly right. 10 points. Try this one, Tony.
Dave Brubeck.
What Ollie dishes out?
Oh,
shh.
Oh, we heard that.
What
we
heard that.
Did you hear from the band?
Yeah, Stan Getz. Yeah.
Stan Getz is exactly right.
Yeah, but I heard it.
All right. Who's responsible for that over there? Fortunately, I have another one.
Excellent.
Let's try
and
again,
I'm sure that we won't hear anything from the orchestra until we ask. Try this one, Tony. Silty runoffs.
Silty runoffs.
Muddy waters.
Muddy waters.
That's muddy right. waters is exactly right. Very good. Try this one, Arnie.
Stan Getz.
Valet for the Angels' boss.
Valet?
Yes.
For the Angels' boss.
Something Parker?
Charlie Parker.
Well, that's actually right. Charlie Parker is correct. You want to parse that out for us?
Charlie's Angels and parking your car.
Parking your car is the way that goes. I will. I just want to go back. Spicy guy is a herby man. Yes, herby man. And, of course, silty runoffs is muddy waters. Try this one, Francine. A solitary bottomland grain grinder.
Bottomland.
Something mill, right?
Glenn Miller.
Glenn Miller is exactly right. Very good. I like these clues. All right. I admit, Bob and Sarah, this one's mine, but, you know, I just needed to be nasty for a little bit.
No, sure.
Try this one, Paula. What Gabby Hayes calls a gluttonous gulp.
A gluttonous?
What Gabby Hayes calls a gluttonous gulp.
Gulp?
Gulp. Burp? No.
Oh, yeah, let's try Fats Waller. Yeah.
That is exactly. I can't believe you got that.
Great.
Yeah, Gabby Hayes would call a gluttonous gulp a fat swaller.
Fat swaller.
Fat swaller.
See how he ruined your category.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. I had one good comment in the audience. And finally, and I will point out, this is from Bob and Sarah. And if you think that was bad, Doug... Ruby's Shorebirds Cable Sports Award.
Ruby's, like in Y apostrophe S?
R-U-B-Y apostrophe S. Ruby's Shorebirds Cable Sports Award. The jazz musician brought to mind by that clue.
Sports Award.
Is there Go Heron?
S-B.
Jill Gull Jill Heron?
Gil Scott Heron.
Gil Scott Heron.
Well, no, that's not it.
No, it is not.
You got part of it, Doug. You really.
What's the sports award?
Well, just a minute.
The ESPYs. I'm thinking of. But I mean, who's ESPY?
Gilberto Gil.
Oh.
ESPY.
Yeah.
Paul falls over the panel.
Yeah.
So an ESPY is the cable.
That's
Dizzy Gillespie.
Dizzy Gillespie is exactly right.
Dizzy Gillespie.
That is Ruby D. The Shorebird is a seagull. The Cable Sports Award is the ESPY. D's Seagull ESPY. Now, what do you think of that, Bob and Sarah? Booed from coast to coast. Good job. You closed hard, you guys. You had a great day, but this was a big day for Miss Fox's team. 91 points and a victory this week. Congratulations. That is all we have time for this week. We want to say thanks so much to Hobart and William Smith Colleges for letting us join the festivities here this alumni weekend. Thanks so much to Kelly Bradley, Bruce Purdy, and all the folks here at the Smith Opera House, a great place in Geneva. Thanks especially to Aaron Reed and our friends at WEOS in Geneva for your support. Schur and Salkin are the writers. Antonio Oliart mans the meters, and Zach Moore is the associate producer and webmaster. From the web this week, you know you're from upstate New York. If you've ever worn shorts and a parka at the same time, if your kid's Halloween suit fits over a snowsuit, or if you've ever had a lengthy conversation with someone who dialed a wrong number. Thanks for the hospitality, Geneva. See you next week.
Support for CESU in Geneva, New York comes from Hobart and William Smith Colleges and the good folks at WEOS-FM in Geneva.
Benjamin, give them the skinny.
CESU, created and produced by Pippin and Finch, Boston.
You've been listening to CESU on 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio, 91.5 WTML Tullahoma, and 91.7 WHRS Cookeville. You can find a complete schedule for all of our programs and listen to a live stream of any of our program channels at WPLN.org.
The Vanderbilt Bill Wilkerson Center has been providing hearing and speech-language services to children for more than 60 years. The Mama Lear Hearing School is the only preschool and kindergarten in Middle Tennessee exclusively designed to teach children with hearing loss to listen and speak. Learn more about hearing services for children with hearing loss at VanderbiltBillWilkersonCenter.com.
Support for our programming today is made possible in part by Nashville Public Radio Producers Circle. The generous support of Producers Circle members helps fund locally produced programming, including our award-winning local news reporting and Capitol Hill Conversations. The time is 10 o'clock. It's 81 degrees in Nashville.
Today on American Idol.